Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
I have a question for Dr. Francis Cress-Wilson. On a job, I've been subjugated to white harassment, which involved me and another white woman. I go by a code of conduct when it comes to dealing with white folks, and I minimize my contact with them. I don't speak to them, and the company that I work for does service for the hotel that she just so happened to work for, and when she tried to speak to me, I would ignore her, and I wouldn't talk to her or anything, and I would just grab the papers and go on with my day. And I've noticed that, you know, there are consequences when it comes to ignoring white women on the job. And I got news from the VP of the hotel that they had contacted my manager, saying that I was harassing her because I was ignoring her. I wasn't following proper job procedures or anything like that. And what I've noticed is that when I was outside of my booth, she tried to come speak to me again. And I just kept ignoring her. I wasn't talking to her or anything like that. And her boyfriend said, "Hey, black effer," like, "Hey, black mother effer," like, you know, I think that was his way of trying to get my attention. So I laughed and I continued on ignoring him and also her. And I noticed how he went on the inside of the hotel and tried to pick a fight with my black coworker, who was just so happened to be African at the front desk. So they called security on him. And she got frustrated and she told me, "Well, you should be happy a woman of my status is trying to speak to you anyway." I have a question. Is there anything that I did wrong? Is there another way I should have handled the situation? Do you have any input on it?
I would just suggest, and correct me if I didn't hear you totally. You see, I think that start out in terms of attempting to be courteous and respectful at all times, you know, to the extent
it's
that
it's hard, though. It's very hard, you know what I'm saying?
See, sometimes white females want to insist that a black male give them attention. And they are, and I'm not saying give the female any attention beyond being professional and polite. Do you see what I'm saying? And
yeah.
You may have to give, you know, sit down with your manager and say the person is being demanding or that I relate to them. Are there guidelines that you would like to give me about how I can conduct myself in a professional way? Do you see, I don't date people on the job if that is what the issue is. But sometimes they can be very provoking. I had a situation where a young black man in Boston. He was working in Senator Kennedy's office, and a white female would constantly come by his desk and touch him. And he said, "Dr. Welsing, how should I handle it?" And I said, "You can say that, you know, really this is sexual harassment." And her response was, "Who are you going to tell? Who will they believe, you or me?" Do you see what I'm saying? So that whole thing of trying to, whether she's trying to get her white boyfriend to have a response that I will protect you from this black monster, you see, but I would start out saying in the workplace, you know, try to have conduct that is professional in relationship to other coworkers. In other words, you may have an idea about what racism, white supremacy is, but in terms of your performing in your work setting, you know, so then I'm going to be rude and disrespectful. I would say don't use that approach. If you can, you know, be polite and courteous, but that doesn't mean, you know, laughing and grinning and, you know, well, don't you date? Don't, you know, a number of black males have said, white females have said to them, "Oh, you're not interested in white females? Or don't you date white females?" Do you see where the person is honest and they might answer, "No, I do not. Thank you very much. No, I do not." Do you see? But if somebody is attempting to be provocative, you may have to resort to speaking to a supervisor. Please tell me how I can handle this situation. You see, I am being polite and courteous and doing my job in relationship to this person, but I would prefer to not have all of this extra attention. Does that make any sense to you?
That makes perfect sense. I also want to add is that I completely appreciate all the things that you've done throughout the years, and I consider you Neely Fuller's Mr. Neely Fuller's partner in justice. And I just appreciate everything that you've done.
Everything that you say on the job or anything else should be just that way. And speaking of on the job, the fourth area of activity, labor. Never put yourself in position of being against the agency or the company. Always say that you are the agency or the company, because that's a trick they play on you. "Oh, I hear you have a grievance against the company." See the words they use? Pay attention to all the words. What you do is say, "No, I don't have a grievance against the company. I have a report of subversive activity against the company." Yeah, that's what you say. I have done it. Put it in just those words. I was called in and asked about the words. "So you said subversive activity?" I said, "Of course." I said, "Any injustice," of course, this, I went round robin. I waited until they asked a whole bunch of questions in front of that. And they wanted to know where would I come up with subversive activity. I said, "Anything that promotes injustice is subversive activity. And so I'm making a report of some unjust acts." "Well, who's responsible for it?" Another one. Watch that trap. Say, "I don't know. That's why I'm making a report. Because you, sir, I think that you are smart enough to find out." So you always take this approach, but put yourself, bottom line, put yourself in the center of the agency or the company that you work for. If you're working for it, you are an employee. Watch how they use terms sometimes. They'll say supervisors and what? No, employees. I mean, it's right in your face. Is a supervisor an employee? business phone calls, personal phone calls. I always said I was a person making a business call. Is that official business? I am an official. Yes, but you are just a GS nobody. What'd you say? I want to get this down. See, then you go on the offense. See, all of a sudden, if they get huffy about the words that you are using, which are scientifically constructed, then what you want to do, you want to start writing. And that's another thing that you do. When they start talking, you whip out your pad and say, wait a minute, you're talking a little fast there. I want to get this down. See, this causes them to be very careful about what they say, because they know that black people usually do everything ad-lib. You know, we got a whole lot of talk off the cuff, we think. The white supremacists write stuff down. They are the master recorders. They write down everything. They record everything. People begin to find that out more and more. Oh, you are saying something? Oh, okay, let me get what you are saying. And on the job, no such thing as a black supervisor. And stop picking on the black supervisor. Superior advisor. That's what supervisor means. No, you're going to have to deal with the real power. And always figure you're alone when you do. Because chances are you are. Doesn't make any difference about what all those other black people said about how they're going to back you up. Forget that. And don't get mad at them. Accept their help as far as they'll go. But everybody has a level of fear. And with jobs getting tight and all like that, nobody who's got a job, I mean, has been on it a little while, wants to lose it. So one thing, what Fuller is going to do, after I told you that I'm with you all the way, after I think about it overnight, and this thing is coming up at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, I'm going to start saying, you know, on second thought, you know, I'm for the brother, but the brother just messed up. See, I'm going to start rationalizing now. I'm going to find all kinds of reasons. But don't you get mad at Fuller. You just say, Fuller, weak kneed out. And according to counter-racist logic, that's what I figured he would do. So I ain't holding it against him. I came prepared to go in there alone. And always come prepared to go in alone. Otherwise, don't go. See, we got this herd psychology. We want to look around, you know, got everybody with us. You know, got the tribe, see? Tribe is what got us on that boat. You got to think as an individual now. That's what united independent means. I want to emphasize that. United independent, meaning you are a majority of one. You do the thinking. You be the Bill Gates of counter-racism. Just walk in and out of your own brain using counter-racist logic. Always follow the logic.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, February 16th, 2017. So I have been told. This is our Thursday weekly session on workplace racism. If folks would like to participate, feel free, chime in. The number to dial, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943 pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. That number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943 pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Before we get, even before I do that, if you are not able to dial in via the phone, you can drop us an email. My email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. You can drop us an email, whatever your situation is, if it's something you want feedback on, or if you have your own observations, or if you have a question about something specifically, we can share it online. We can, you know, you can stay anonymous if that would help, but certainly we'll share. I keep my eye on my email during this broadcast, so you can feel free to drop us an email at any time, and we will share untiljustice@gmail.com. Again, Thursday's Workplace Racism. This is, I think, pretty much the only program, even though I should probably say this for all programs and maybe especially for the compensatory call-in as well. But for this program, this, you know, is really not about spectators. This is not a program. It should not be the case where we have people that, oh, yeah, I have listened to Thursday's Workplace Racism for 3 months and have never participated. I mean, that just should not happen. There should not be people that are listening to this program on a regular basis and not participating. Dr. Welsing, she talked about that specifically and saying she talked about, number one, black people, victims of racism, us being in denial of racism, not talking about the different ways that we are being terrorized by racist man, racist woman, racist child, particularly on the job where we spend so many hours, years of our lives, and particularly racists controlling, you know, our quality of life and, you know, your housing situation, your vehicle, transportation situation. So much is connected to your ability to income, labor. So much is connected to that. So it's really important, I think, being able to discuss that honestly, at minimum with ourselves, maybe, you know, family members and what have you, but really important. And I know Dr. Welsing, she said that. She said it should be impossible to get 10 black people together, 5 black people together, and not have, you know, like robust hours of dialogue about workplace racism, people not being paid correctly or not getting promoted, or, you know, white people that are super unqualified getting promoted and being supervisors and what have you. And just the list goes on and on and on and on and on. Even, in fact, I can speak from a personal level. Our 8-year anniversary coming up next week, 8 years of the cows being on. I have had so many that I have spoken with over the years, and I would say now on a regular basis when I talk to people off the air and, you know, they were discussing racism, invariably within everything that people say, you know, that Obama is a no good skunk and I hate him, and, you know, everything else that people want to talk about, Al Sharpton is whack and all of that, blah, 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 blah. Workplace racism will come up. Just, I think, within the past 7 days, all of the people that I talked to, off all of the conversations that I had with non-white people that were off the air, drifted to workplace racism, where a black person was not being compensated correctly. They were not getting the correct wage for the overtime hours that they had worked. How many conversations have we had on workplace racism where people are not being compensated correctly? It's tons of people with that. It seems like that is a regular issue for black people all over the world. I think I talked to a different person, and they had a totally different issue about employment and interviews and all of that, which is, you know, a whole nother massive problem. Even getting employment for a lot of non-white people can end up being a major issue. Sexual touching, I know she has called in regularly. She might share about it, but that coming up again for her. And that's one that I really would emphasize. Everybody, you heard Dr. Welsing talking with the caller who dialed in about the white woman who, you know, this unwanted attention from this white woman and that spiraling out into this big problem. But everybody, I think you should practice your counter-racist code for dealing with sexual harassment. If someone, you know, touches you, what is your response? I think Emmy talked about that before, but I'm a big proponent of the you pull away like an extremely intense move away or jerk away from whatever they're doing, if it's a hug or what have you, you immediately thrust yourself away. Whoa, I do not do touching on the job. And I would state it clearly, firmly, this is not a joke. I would just go ahead and practice that so that you can get exactly what you want to say. And even, you know, the physical movement, if you're sitting down and they come up and do, boom, this is what I'm going to do. If I'm standing up, boom, this is what, just practice it so it'll be natural. It'll be in a rhythm. Because I know for some people, just in the moment, it catches you off guard and, you know, you can kind of stumble with what you want to say or how you want to respond. But you, that's one that you want to be solid. Like anybody comes and they are doing the hugging, touching, rubbing, any of that, nuzzling, I've already got my code on that. Immediate. You can give them the stiff arm for people who know football. Bam. I do not do touching on the job. Very important. But started all that spectating. This is not for spectators. So this is not something where you should just be listening for what entertainment value you can gather from different stories and things that listeners share or that I share, what have you. That's not what this is for. This is for sharing, learning, coming up with strategies that will work with regards to what we're dealing with on the job, whether you're self-employed or not, things that will help in this particular area of people activity. And I think a lot of people that listen to this program have jobs, go to work, whether you're self-employed or not, have experience with this. Please share. Even, and again, you can reflect on your work history, things that you've done earlier in life, maybe even when you were more confused about racism. You can reflect on that, what you did then and what you would do now based on your understanding of racism, white supremacy. I will share one report that a caller wrote in. I'll share that and then I'll get to some of the folks who dialed in. So this person wrote, anyone who has worked with quote unquote Hispanics can tell you they like to uphold the racial hierarchy no matter what. They like to base a person's intelligence level on their skin color. So the darker you are, the less intelligent you are, and the lighter, the more intelligent you are. That's global, I think. They also never go into a job trying to take a white person's position, but seem to come together to make sure to eliminate all the black people there. I have a number of racist Hispanic coworkers who like to act on their racism. Again, I just admit I don't use this term because it's confusing. You can be an individual classified as white and be also Hispanic. They even have that on the census. Or you could be someone who is a non-white person and also considered Hispanic. It's just, it causes confusion. These could just be racists that are doing this, or these could be victims of racism who have been groomed, like all of us, to support racism, white supremacy. But continuing, I have a number of racist Hispanic coworkers who like to act on their racism. I remember a group of them talking about black employees and saying that if it weren't for them, Hispanic employees, the black ones wouldn't know anything because they are not that smart. I overheard one of them say that it's good she's sitting on the side of the room so she can educate the slow black people. Whenever a black employee gives one of them a form to complete or needs info in a file, they immediately start trying to train that black employee, even though no one asked, and they already know how to do their job. They purposely do that to validate their beliefs of dark-skinned people being slow or less intelligent. I had a few try and do that to me, and when I point out they are wrong, they get visibly upset or try to overtalk me. There was a new black employee who became friendly with the non-black and white female workers. They trained her for their department. A month later, she was fired. Come to find out, they kept tabs on all her mistakes and complained to the white female supervisor that she wasn't getting her job, although they trained her. How do you deal with passive-aggressive white and non-black coworkers? Why do these companies hire black people just to terrorize, then fire them after a couple of months? Those are the two questions this person concluded with. The answer to the last question, I think, is very easy because they are dedicated to racism, white supremacy, and that is what the system is all about, terrorizing black people for fun. The first question, how do you deal with passive-aggressive white and non-black coworkers? the types of incidents that you talked about in terms of them being discourteous when they talk to you, or like you said, you need information for them, or you know, make a request that they file this form or file this information, and then they try to start training you or talking down to you. I think it was Chantel where she was having an issue. I think this was off the air too. She was having a problem with a white person. I think she might have even called in, but this white person was the same type of thing. He was going to be her overseer, right? He was going to check the clock every day when she came in, when she came from lunch, like, oh my goodness, you're here at 7:30 today. You normally don't come in until 10. What's going on here? Did you change? Those type of things, you know, hey, wait a minute now. It's 12:31 now. That means you took a 31 minute lunch break. Does the boss know that type of thing? And she asked, you know, same thing. What do you do to deal with this? And I said, I would not make a big issue out of it. I would just be very clear. If this person is not my supervisor, it would be as short a response every time as possible. I would make it clear I'm not joking with this person. I'm going to give them as little attention as possible. I come in at 7:30 and they're, hey, what are you doing? Just here to get my work done, Bob. This was a male that happened to be doing. Just here to get my work done, Bob. Same thing, lunch, any of these other things. So you go to give the file, the examples that you listed. You go to give information or what have you, and they're, you know, going to train you. Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate it. That's all I needed. Thanks, and on my way. I'm not even staying to have a conversation. If this is not a supervisor or someone, I'm not even staying to have a conversation. If all I needed was da-da-da-da-da with the form, just, oh, wait a minute. Excuse me, Ted. Excuse me, Susan, Mr. Johnson. I just need the form done. Thank you so much for your help. I got a lot to do. I just got to drop this off and get going. I got to let a lot of other folks know that, you know, this has to be done. Thank you so much. And keep rolling. It's not anything. I'm not getting into a debate. I'm not getting into an argument. And if they want to continue talking, I would just move along. And if someone raises an issue, I would just say I was informed that my duty was to pass out these forms or whatever it is to get them to do, you know, this paperwork. They understood that they needed to do the paperwork, but they proceeded to have dialogue that was related to a lot of other things that were not about getting this task done. I had a lot of work to do. I really, you know, couldn't stay for this, you know, voluntary training session or whatever that they were doing. It was not about getting, you know, this task done. That's what I was told I was supposed to get done. This didn't seem like it was related to that. Am I incorrect? And they can set you straight. That's the way I would deal with it. I'm sure some other folks might have suggestions as well. Again, the number 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in who have a hand up, line should be open. Feel free.
Yes, I'm here.
Hello. Yes,
I'm
sir.
Here. Greetings, Gus, all the listeners and callers. I am on the plantation, so I'll try to keep my events concise, short and sweet. So I had two incidents. One, I reported a white female trying to get my attention about two workplace racisms ago. So basically, day before yesterday, same female, she approaches me and she said something weird, but I didn't hear what she said, and I drove past her. And then a non-white black male, he was down next to her, and then he was yelling out something. So I had earplugs in, I couldn't hear what he was saying. So I kind of laughed for a second. And then when I got close to him, he was like, hey, don't you have love for her? Like that. I was like, what? He's like, don't you have love for her? Like that. He's like, she's saying that you don't like her. So I was going to pull off immediately. But then I stopped for a second. I was like, wait, this is going to turn bad. So I was like, well, I was like, I don't know you. Like that. I don't know you. I speak like that. I said that to her. And then he repeated himself, and I just drove off. So then in my head, I was like, the cows kept going through my head, like, all right. What would, like, Gus suggest for me to do, trying to think of, like, things that I can possibly say to you know what I mean, try to save face and not try to get in trouble because white females are vindictive. So I approached her later on, and I told her, I said, hey, I'm not trying to be rude or anything. I was like, it's just that I normally don't speak to people I don't know. I'm on a job to work. I was like, and I don't joke around like that. I was like, especially with females, because I've worked somewhere where a male and a female had words, and then I was like, it turned into something where it could have been possibly sexual harassment. And I was like, I don't want to put myself in that position. And she was like, oh, yeah, well, I'm cool and stuff like that. She was like, I'm cool. Oh, sorry about that. So when I approached her to talk to her, she started, like, throwing, like, fake punches at me and stuff like that. And I was like, whoa. And then I brought that stuff up or whatever. And she was like, oh, well, I'm cool. I was like, yeah, I understand that. I was like, but, again, I'm on a job. And I was like, I'm just not here for all that. So she told two other black males that she think that I don't like her, this, that, and the third. So the one black male came up to me. He told me that he believes that she's having intercourse with a non-white, non-black, Hispanic young guy, because he said that after her husband purchased a house and a new car for her, she got a divorce with him, and then she started dealing with this young guy. And they keep telling me, like, she like younger males. But that's not something I'm interested in, and I'm not here for that anyway. And the other workplace experience I had, I was on my way to work. Actually, the compensatory call-in was live last Saturday. And I was going to call in, but I went inside at 7-Eleven. And when I go inside, it's a white woman screaming out, nigger, effing nigger, this, that, nigger. And I thought that she was talking to someone inside the store. And I looked around, and she had a Bluetooth in. And the guy behind the register, he's a dark male. I'm not sure if he's black or what, but he's a heavily melanated male. And he's the store clerk, and it's like a few white people in there. And I was on the phone with my brother, and then he's like, what's all that? I was like, some white woman in here screaming out nigger. And he's like, my brother, he's not codified, so he's like, slap her in the mouth. And I laughed at him, and I was like, no. And I said loud, I was like, this is what I expect from white women. I was like, racism, you got to expect it. And uncodifiedly, I kind of laughed at it because I was shocked, but I wasn't surprised. I was shocked that she was so openly saying it right there. I mean, it's out of the store. And this is like, if you want to call it the quote-unquote hood, the downtown area of Allentown, PA. And she was just blurring this stuff out like it was no tomorrow. And that's basically it. Oh, one more thing. Gus, did you ever get my email in reference to the PayPal and the information for Roz?
Is it Roz's email that you need?
No. I was trying to send some information to Roz, and I wanted to make sure that the PayPal I had went through that I had sent last month.
I guess so. It's two, PayPal and then Roz. So did you need Roz's email to transfer this information?
Yeah, possibly.
Okay. I guess Roz is here, so if he's all right with that, I can forward his email.
Absolutely, sir.
Okay. That should be one. I guess, I don't know, maybe you can email me whatever it is that you're trying to send to Roz, and I can forward, or I don't know, whichever, to make sure that you have his email and whatever you want to send to him, I can pass that along if you email
okay.
it to me.
No problem. Thank you, sir. I'll mute.
And the PayPal, I guess maybe you can, I think if it's the person I'm thinking about, I can just check for your email to make sure it's you and I can verify.
Okay, no problem. Thank you, sir.
For sure.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you guys. Greetings to the previous caller and to the other callers and listeners. I just wanted to comment on his first workplace racism situation. One thing I would do, because white women are treacherous, is I would record. I wish you would have recorded the conversation you had with her where you were explaining why you function how you function. So that way, since she's lying now and telling people, I don't think he likes me, you could say, hey, if it really goes that far, you don't have to let everybody hear the recording. But if she tries to take it to a point where it becomes an issue,
You can just play the recording. This was our conversation. You can hear what she said. You can hear what I said. I explained everything. You know, I was very, very straightforward, very respectful. You know, I told her, basically let them hear for themselves that she's a liar. That's the only other thing I would suggest, because she's a liar and she's proving it already by continuing to run around that your place of employment telling people that you don't like her. So I would just, definitely I would do something like that just in case she tries to take it to the next level and get management involved, like the story we heard earlier. I guess it was one of the recordings where the black male was being harassed and she ended up escalating it. Just in case it goes there, I would record, a situation like that. I would record it so that way I have the conversation. She's fully aware that everything she's saying is incorrect and a lie. And that way I could just expose her if she tries to take it to the next level. That would be my suggestion. This week has been a short week for me, so I don't have anything major that took place at the job, but I had an incident that happened today when I left the job. And traveling home, this goes to show again, white people are analyzing us all the time, and this one turned out to be a cop. So I go into the train station. I'm heading down the stairs. I just got off work, heading down the stairs to go catch my train. And this white guy is looking at me. So I look at him, but I just look at him pretty, just in a serious, straight face. And then I walk past him, and then I notice he's looking at me again. So then I get just annoyed, like, why is this cracker looking at me? So then I look at him, and I kind of grill him, but I don't look at him too crazy, but I just grill him just to let him know I see you, because I like to be battlefield aware when I'm traveling. So since I knew he had this weird fascination with me, I just basically looked at him a second time, and then I kept walking. So as I get to the bottom of the stairs, I do a look. I look to my right. I don't turn directly around, but I wanted to get my peripheral vision just to see where he was. So as I did that, I noticed he turned around and he's coming down the stairs. So I just say, okay, I know where you are now. So I head down the second flight of stairs, and then I walk a few feet in, and then I do another peripheral without him knowing that I'm looking at him, and I spot that he's walking behind me, like maybe 7 to 8 feet away. So then I get to the place that I normally wait for the train, and as I'm waiting for the train, he rolls up on me and flashes a badge. And he says, oh, sir, I wanted to know, what's that? I said, what's what? He said, what's that clip to your pocket? So I reach in my pocket, and I pull out my tactical pen, and I said, it's a pen. So as he's looking at it, he said, oh, it's a pen? I said, yes. So I opened it up, and I let him see it was a pen, that it was a writing pen. He said, oh, okay. He said, no problem. I just thought it was a knife. And I said, oh, no problem. I said, yeah, it's just a pen. And he went about his business. And it was it was literally the clip of the pen. Normally, I take my tactical pen everywhere simply because I travel about 80 miles from my house, and if anybody wants to get busy, they're going to get it. So I keep it clipped on my pocket, and normally I wear dark-colored pants, so they wouldn't pay any attention. Today, I happen to be wearing a sweatsuit, so it's a gray sweatsuit, and the pen is black. So the clip just must have stood out, but it's such a small clip. So it really let me know how he was zeroing in on me and literally did a head-to-toe scan, probably in seconds. And he locked in on this pen, and he followed me. And once he realized it was a pen, he let me go. But he's still a racist, practicing white supremacy. And I just wanted to put that out there so people are aware. Like I said, tactical pens, you can take them anywhere. It writes, it's a pen, so they can't do anything to you for it. But just the idea that they were paying that much attention and scrutinizing me from top to bottom on that level should give us a lot of pause for thought about how they function collectively. Thank you so much, and I'll meet my line.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I'll start off with by saying in the beginning thing that you played with the person asking Dr. Wells a question, I believe it was about some sort of interaction between himself and a coworker, to whereas he just totally ignored the white person. Had a similar experience. I think I may have mentioned it maybe once on the Kyle's years ago, But it reminded me of it. I'll just bring it back up again. Basically, what it was a on a fire truck that I worked on at the time. You had four positions: the driver operator, which is rank was basically a firefighter, the two tailboard guys that sit in the back. They're firefighters, and the supervisor is a lieutenant rank. Our lieutenant got promoted, non-white black male, and it was replaced with, I think on purpose, this white male who, amongst non-white black people, had a reputation for being a racist. Relatively young white male at that. I think it was done on purpose because the station in the shift that I worked on was with a lot of less confused non-white black males, and we were steadily bidding out going to other places, but at this particular time they put this guy in that spot. So we tried to get along with him. Us three tried to get along with him, three black males tried to get along with him, and it wasn't working out from day one. It's just like you were talking to a one-track mind machine. This particular white male, he would get out on calls and do and say whatever he wanted in a way that was unprofessional and discourteous to primarily a non-white black area, and amongst the behaviors that he would have in the station itself. So we three decided that he was no longer going to be afforded the normalcies that take place in the workplace, such as mourning or any conversation at all, other than what is vital to get the work done during the day, such as blood pressure, 120 over 80, you know, the rescue call or whatever, you know, certain things like that. And that was it. The tension rose, the tension temperature rose until the mercury chamber on the thing burst. And what took place was it resulted into a large meeting at the fire station at the time. Fire department director Chief Phillips was something like a deputy chief at the time, and he represented the fire department. There were several other people that was in this meeting in the fire station. Matter of fact, they took all of the units out of service to have this meeting, and it lasted for maybe about an hour and a half. Something like that. At first, it wasn't going well because Chief Phillips basically was attempting to, in my opinion, show that he was in charge and it's his way or you know, that sort of thing, to whereas I'm going to get to the bottom of this, you know. And so I decided to try to find a way to lower that particular presence. So everybody can, so to speak, speak honestly on the issues that was at hand. As Mr. Fuller has said that you think you're going to be with others, but you're by yourself. The other two guys basically was kind of quiet in the meeting, but I was not going to sit there and let them say and do anything and that was against my best interest without me saying something. So I actually told something that was untrue in order to lower this tension by stating hey, you know, when I was a child, I used to watch cowboy movies, and I hate cowboy movies. But in the cowboy movie, in order for tensions to go down, everybody put their guns on the table so they can speak freely. So, and I would suggest, I would suggest that that be done. So if you want honesty in the meeting and everybody to participate in the meeting, then, Chief, you have to kind of like lower your authority level down from threatening people and whatnot and let us speak. So from there, the meeting went on, and on the lieutenant side, the white male lieutenant side, he would say something, and I would say something back in retort to what he was talking about for the his quote-unquote side of the story, so to speak. And it was no giving up on either part at all. And so, therefore, because of this stalemate, the authority figures, administrators, went into a room and sat and met. And in turn, they came back out. And when they said, well, it looks like there's nothing's going to be resolved here, but somebody's going to have to leave. And I figured from there that it was going to be the white male lieutenant because he wasn't bidded in. He was just there holding a spot until the bidding process took place over again. And that kind of like settled the whole issue as far as getting him away from us. But presently, Monday, to be exact, I witnessed what I think is an act of racism. This is a person that I mentioned before, white male who basically was placed on the coaching staff last season, not this season that we won the championship, the season before. He was placed on the staff, and I mentioned about that we were in a coaches meeting. And every coaching meeting that we would be in, he would have some kind of critique about what's going on, what he doesn't like happening, without bringing anything that was helpful. And I kind of like, challenged him on it, especially when he mentioned that he's supposed to be the person coaching the quarterbacks. And he mentions that I'm not going to go through all of this with this child and what. And I said, well, why are you? I asked him, I put it in a question for, well, why are you with us then? If you're not going to be doing it, he stormed out of the meeting. That was a year before last football season. This is the same person. He is what they call a CSI. Now, I don't know what that stands for, but actually what it ends up being is indoor suspension. Because in the state of Florida, legally, you cannot suspend a child from school. But as we all know, and under the system of racism and white supremacy, they have their tools to be able to address and still get their incorrect work done. And in this case, against children, primarily non-white children, primarily non-white black children, primarily non-white black males, and they have this thing called indoor suspension. Loopholes is what the code word that you probably have heard about it. How they do these things. Sometimes they actually send children home still, but nevertheless, he's in charge of that. There's a conflict that's going on between the principal, who is, I believe, his background, his family is from quote unquote Cuba, a place called Cuba, and there's conflict between him and these white people who are from this part of the world. So with this particular guy, he gets a lot of extra money. So the principal is making him, quote unquote, work for it. And he is not happy at all. So he put him in this particular position. And basically what he does, because I arrive at the school in and around after lunchtime, something like that, just to sit in on with the head coach, and we talk about different things, and I get a chance to be around the young people, the children, and we're right next to this office. They actually line these children up
in single file lines. These are high school age young people. Line them up and walk them to this place, which is right next door to where we sit and meet at. And this particular day, which was Monday, I heard a loud voice, myself and the head coach and another coach, who is not an employee of Dade County, he's actually a bus driver, but he's a contract coach like I am, this loud voice yelling, and the next thing I heard him basically call a student of non-white black male a motherfucker. I mean, loudly. Now, we didn't see him, but recognizing his voice. You know, and we looked at one another, and I looked at the child. He was actually not in physical connection with the child, but he was in distance away, and the child was walking out of the area. I wrote it down, the time and the date in my on my notepad on my phone to keep a reminder of it. Until I can think about what I would do and what can I do with that particular incident. And in turn, yesterday, I went back to the school yesterday, you know, daily routine, and there was a young person that was sitting in the office where we're at. And the head coach, he was talking to him because he actually was in CSI, and this same person that I was talking about, the white male, suspected racist. Apparently, he put him out the room to go into the room where myself and Coach Rowe, I'm sorry, Coach, the head football coach, and was at. And Coach was talking to him. The head coach was talking to him, and basically was stating, you know, about behavior and stating that, well, I don't have any problem with you, so whatever you're doing that you and I don't have any problem, you should do the same thing with everybody that you. I would just sit there listening, you know, because it sounded everything he was saying, it sounded correct to me, you know, logic, and was, you know, made logical sense and whatnot. And then I shared, you know, with him in conversation also, basically suggesting to this young person about, you know, being codified on what you say and what you do, be consistent with other people. And basically he, you know, it made sense enough to him. I asked him, did it make sense to him? And he said, yes, sir, it makes sense to me what you're saying. And that basically is the workplace racism. I'm open for suggestions with what should I do with that particular incident. If anybody has anything they wanted to add on to it. Thank you.
Thank you kindly for sharing. I think I'll immediately documenting. I said that before too. I think that's always good, because then you can take time to think about how you want to proceed. You know, have all the information, the time, the date, what was said, who was there to witness or what have you, and then you can take, you know, that evening or what have you, and come back and move forward with how you want to deal with it.
I would say it's bound to come around again, because he is still connected with sports at the high school, as far as weight training, that sort of thing. The principal does have his hands on when it comes to athletics. He used to be a football player himself, and he really wants for the sports program, especially the football team, to be successful. And so it's bound to be a time when something takes place, a meeting or something like that, and there'd be some suggestions on how is the best approach to dealing with young people, and then that will give me an opportunity to go to my notepad on what not to do.
Yeah, I've definitely heard Mr. Fuller sometimes saying these type of situations, as opposed to acting on it immediately, record, wait, there will be an opportunity where you can present that information in the future along with other documents that you've gathered if other things have happened before that. So you just add that to, you know, all the list of incorrect things you've noted already. And then if things happen subsequently, you note all that as well. So then you're not just presenting this one incident. You can have a whole catalog of incidents that you're reporting, which can put you in a much stronger position. It's not just one thing that we can just, oh, that was just a bad day, and, you know, he was a little impatient, a little rude, a little unprofessional, but he's doing better. We'll get him sensitivity training. But when you can actually point out, and it might even be widespread, that, you know, he did this day, and he did something similar this time, and then, you know, other people have been doing that, I mean, can put you in a much better position. But other folks have suggestions, thoughts on that as well? Other people that dialed in who have a hand up line should be open also.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Howdy doody, everybody. It's Ken Steele here, and I just wanted to make a few comments that I think will be constructive. In response to an earlier caller who was addressing a situation with a suspected racist female on his job, I am in no place, in no position to criticize any of the choices or decisions that you've made in interacting with these people. However, I will strongly suggest that if you find yourself speaking about your feelings or talking at length with a suspected racist on the job, you may want to stop what you're doing and go back to work, or stop what you're saying and redirect the conversation back to work. A suggestion that I have for small talk on the job, if you want to appear, like a member of the team, like you're involved with discussion and you are, average employee, you may want to take up prompting discussions about food. If you've prompted a discussion about food with your coworkers, more often than not, I have found that they will take the ball and run. And there's very little room to make that conversation political, race, having heightened racial implications. It avoids the terroristic aspects of interacting with them. If you can keep the conversation to food and especially sweets, snacks, just as trivial as conversation as you can muster, that will diffuse some of the more tense situations that you're finding on the job. Just always remember, focus on the job, focus on work, and if you're finding yourself speaking with these people at length, and it's not about work, you may be moving in error. That's my suggestion about that. Also, with respect to micromanagement, I've recently dealt with a micromanagement situation, and one thing that I've found that has worked this time and even in the past has been to say, especially if the orders are not written down in an email or not specific, or they're not a specific company policy, if it's just these are just just somebody trying to flex their authority over you, oftentimes what I do will be to just say, okay, yes, I'll agree with them. I'll say, all right, exactly. And then I'll just do what it is that I need to do, regardless of whatever it is that I agreed to do. If I didn't break any rules, if I didn't do anything off code with respect to the company, more often than not, and also if the outcome of my actions were positive, it will basically override the need for micromanagement, and oftentimes acting in such a manner will earn you more autonomy, because they'll just get tired of giving you orders and seeing you deliberately not follow them. One thing that I've noted is I've had managers say to me, you know, Ken, it's kind of like you're telling me to fuck off, you know, and, oh, sorry, my apologies. I didn't mean to swear, but they only use those words explicitly. And they'll pick up on it, but oftentimes there's nothing that they can do. If you're doing your job and you're doing your work and you're getting your orders fulfilled and you're working up to code, there's really nothing that they can do. And oftentimes, yes, it'll often conclude in you getting more autonomy. Also, this morning, I received an email from management. This email was in relation to a candidate that was applying to a job at an organization called Benny Hinn Ministries. And he's the minister that goes around, I think, in Atlanta, and he'll dramatically hit his parishioners on the forehead and they fall in dramatic fashion or whatever. And they mentioned in this email that the candidate should, quote, mind his social media presence. And it was attached, and this email was forwarded to everybody in the division. And you could see in the email they had screenshots of this person's social media. And it was, to my surprise, the candidate that they were talking about was a non-white black male. I was pretty shocked. I'm not gonna lie. That really kind of hit me. And these posts were, posts that said, I can't believe they got me working on Martin Luther King Day. There was one post that was a joke about Black Lives Matter. There was another post about a joke he posted about kittens being like drugs. Just a post that I'm sure this suspected, this victim of racism, I'm sure he himself thought it was innocuous, was something that warranted this to be communicated not only to the recruiter that presented this candidate, but it eventually got to all of us and upper management in my organization. And you can bet that notes are being made, and this is probably not the only time that this has happened. So I just want to say to all the victims of racism out there, when you are on social media, you may want to use an alternate spelling of your name. You may want to use an alias if you can, and if you're having trouble with social media, the social media police trying to verify your identity, just know that that is not an official government organization. You can use any sort of ID that meets the criteria that they're looking for. You can even make an ID that meets their criteria. So there's ways to circumvent ID verification. Just try to not use your real name on these things. They're not just looking at your LinkedIn. Let's see. Also, I recently got an iPhone 7 Plus, and the screen is quite large. And I noticed that when I was walking by my desk, I could see my screen quite visibly just from the walkways. And I did some research, and I found that you can purchase privacy screens for your mobile devices. And I totally suggest purchasing a privacy screen, if not for your own computer monitor at work, also your smartphone or any tablets that you may have, simply because at these jobs, we all should be aware that these suspected white supremacists have what they describe as prying eyes, and they will be looking at your screens, just as they, as is frequently mentioned on this program, that they're looking at your books. They will look at your screens when you are not aware. So if you can do anything to circumvent that, I totally suggest that. I have a lot more peace of mind now that I have this privacy screen here. I suggest if you're a victim of racism on the job, you do that. And I guess that will be it for now. Thank you.
Indeed. Folks, we have not heard from. If you have questions or responses to what we've heard thus far, or if you have your own commentary you would like to share, feel free. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943 pound. Press star 61. Fast forward, we'll get your hand up, get you on the screen, and we can get you on the line. Folks, we have not heard from.
Good evening, Gus. How are you?
Right poorly.
Okay, great. Good evening to everybody else on the show. I was calling, I had a situation that happened a couple of days ago. I went into this, to a Belk's. It's like a shopping store, a clothing shopping store with my son. And when I went in, I had to first pass, like, these little things that will alert if anybody has anything on them, if they're leaving, right? So anyway, I started to look around and I didn't see anything that I wanted, and so maybe 10 minutes in, I decided, well, let's just go home. So I'm walking out. I'm headed towards the door. I'm passing the little dog security things, and it goes off. And I'm like, what is happening? So I step back into the store. There are white people in there, of course. You know, Belk's is, you know. So anyway, I'm there. I step back into the store, and this lady asked me if I had any bags. And I said, does it look like I have any bags? And then she says, well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, some people, they put their bags in their pockets. What? No. And so she was like, oh, okay, well, you can go. It's all right. So then I go back out, and there was no alert or anything. And I'm just trying to figure out what happened. And all kind of different things went off in my mind as to what may have happened, you know? So I'm thinking, they saw me coming in. Did they want to stop me? Did they want it to go off? Like what could have... I had the biggest headache.
Ma'am, I definitely appreciate you sharing the incident. I'm sorry it had to be something of that nature, you know, to share. But this is our workplace racism broadcast. Is that... I'm missing how this is related to workplace racism.
Well... the woman that stopped me, she worked there.
Right, absolutely. But that's not really the focus. The focus of this broadcast is in terms of black people, non-white people, experiencing racism, white supremacy on the job and while we are at work, and things to do to neutralize when we are subjected to racism while we are at work, not necessarily just when other white people are at work practicing racism while we are, you know, shopping or whatever it happens to be. Like, that's, yes, that is racist, but that's not really the focus of this broadcast. Does that make sense, or?
Makes plenty of sense. Thank you.
Okay, I'm not hearing her. If you're still with us, I'm sorry that happened. That is frequently what will prompt people to dial in is an experience like that, being mistreated. I'm sorry you had to deal with that. I think she said her son was with her. That's horrendous. I'm sorry?
That's totally fine. That's totally fine. Thank you for having me.
I'm sorry?
Give me a chance to speak. I do appreciate it.
Can I be heard real briefly?
I can't hear you, but I do want to make sure that I'm nabbing other folks that we have not heard from yet, because we do have other people who haven't spoken.
May I be heard?
I didn't hear her towards the yes. Yes, ma'am. We can hear you.
Hi, this is Ari. I'm calling from Renton. I called in last week on Thursday, so I'm just giving an update, and I wanted to reply to the first caller. But first, my update, I'm the caregiver from last weekend. And so today I actually called in sick because I just figured I needed some time off. It's like the middle of it's the middle of the quarter. And if you live on your own and go to school, and I'm 23, so if there's any young listeners out, maybe they can listen to this. Yeah, so I just took the day off and took some time to just meditate, do what I had to do to just ease my mind around the house. I didn't really do too much. The reason I took time off was because it just seemed like I was, like, ready to snap. All the examples last week and just the things that I've brought up to my employer, like writing things down and bring it up to them. I would say I've been doing my kind of work for 6 years, and everywhere I go, they seem like pretty underqualified to even be running a business, especially taking care of people. So this week or last week, coming up to this week, I just felt like I was about to snap. So I just wanted to take time off to focus on my studies and get my mind together before I go back to work. And also to reply to the first caller, this just reminds me of when I worked in a warehouse. I don't know what kind of environment you're in, but you would see a lot of white females try to talk to, like, non-white guys. And some of them will respond back to them and kind of create that initial engagement with them. So it makes them think like you're interested, or even though you're not interested, they're like, oh, well, he's going to talk to me because he did it before, so he'll do it again, especially when you work and you see them all the time, even if you guys have different jobs, you know, like you were just driving by. Yeah, I've observed white women like to do that. It doesn't matter how old or young they are. And if other non-white males are telling you, like, oh, she says this and she says that, they're probably not really codified. So you should probably just stay away from that situation in general. Because, yeah, like I said, it reminds me of when I worked in the warehouse and other non-white males would just say, oh, yeah, I don't really like her, but as you can see, she's always trying to talk to me. I've seen a lot of them ignore them or give them a cold shoulder, or, you know, the ones that do engage, that just creates a lot of problems. Especially, it just adds on to the workplace racism we all experience. So, definitely what the other caller said, just maybe record. It doesn't sound too extreme, honestly, with the stories that I've heard that have happened in workplaces. Most of the time they just want to have sexual relations with you. It kind of sounds extreme, but most of the time in the workplaces, that's what it leads to, from what I've heard. Thanks for listening.
Interesting observations. Wow. Always about minimizing conflict. That's something I keep in the forefront. Other folks that we have not heard from, and I did want to make sure I get in my reminder, this is our workplace racism broadcast that does happen from time to time, where people dial in and are sharing things that are not related to workplace racism. I do try to, you know, keep our focus to make sure that we're not, you know, talking about other things. There are many aspects of racism, white supremacy, that can and should be addressed, but this is specifically to make sure that we make time to focus on workplace racism. So if folks have other things that they want to share, the compensatory call-in, welcome. Saturday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, dial in and share. But this is specifically about workplace racism, non-white people, whatever your job happens to be, and how racism, white supremacy impacts us specifically in that area of people activity. That's what this is about. I think we even had a caller earlier who was talking about their 7-Eleven experience. I was going to jump in then too, because that's not really related to workplace racism, just trying to keep us on topic. Other folks that we have not heard from have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, beautiful people. This is Ami. I have a couple of things that I'd like to share. I was trying to figure out which way to place them so that they would make a little bit of sense. But, one thing, kind of kudos to the previous female caller. If you know you need time, take it. I can't say what everyone should do, but I have mental health days where I just kind of call out of everything just so I can be by myself and have some time alone to just process. So I'm all for the mental health day. So last weekend I was at work, and I worked the overnight, and there was a situation with these two white individuals, male and female, and I actually ended up recording it. So, Gus, is it okay if I play it?
That's funny. Let's hear it.
Okay. Let me know if you can't hear it. So here we go. Hold on 1 second.
We don't have a key for you. Can I see your photo ID, please?
How long have I lived here for 3 months and you do not know who I am?
Because I just got here.
Can I see your photo ID? That's fine. Well,
you need to get into your apartment.
Yes.
So can I see your photo ID?
Yes, you can.
Thank you.
Don't make me stand outside for 20 minutes when I've lived here for 3 months.
If I don't know you, that's what I have to do.
That's fine. Well, your system should know me.
It doesn't, because you're in a company. So let me see your photo ID.
Your system is relevant.
Okay, sir. Three months. Not be disrespectful. Let me. Respectful. You lost or left your fob. That's not. That's fine. Sorry, you stand out in the cold because I don't know you and I can't verify you. So you cannot get into your apartment, correct? Or you can't? I cannot. Correct.
There's more, but for the sake of time, it's just there's a lot of silence. And then it ends because I keep recording as I let them upstairs to the apartment. And they're rude even there. The woman tried to keep the key, and then they slammed the door, and you can even hear it in the recording. But I'm not going to make you listen to all the silence to get to that. So that's at like 3:45 Saturday or Sunday morning, it would be like 3:45 in the morning. And so these two people walked up to the front. Now, I see them on camera because I sit in the front, but they're not, pardon me, they're just there. Like, they're not doing anything from the camera. So I keep paying attention because sometimes what people will do is come to the front and then people will come out downstairs to let them in, or they'll come downstairs and then they'll leave to go to some other place. This is my second weekend. This is only my second weekend there. So I don't know anyone. I don't recognize faces. Like, these people don't know me. I don't know them. This building does not have security. I am the only thing that prevents people from getting into, well, the locked doors are what prevent people from getting in, and I'm the one that has to, you know, be there at the door. So they're there, and it's like they're there for a while, but, you know, it's none of my business whatever anyone is doing. All of a sudden, then, like, much, much later, like, right around the time that I start recording, they start making these gestures. So I tell them they have to, there's a number, there's a sign that says if you need assistance, call the number. The number rings to the front desk where I'm at. So I tell, like, you point, I point to the phone, and then they use their cell phone to call the number. Mind you, they've been standing there for however long they were standing there and didn't call or anything. So I have no idea. Like, to me, everything is like they're just out there until they start making waves, and I'm like, oh, okay, you need to get in. So I answer the phone, and immediately they're cussing at me. Now, at the time, I, of course, was like, whoa, wait a minute, you know? And so I ask them for their apartment number. They give me the apartment number, but they give me their name is not on the apartment. So I'm not going to give you any information to tell you what to tell me to let you in. If you're giving me a name that's not on the apartment, I'm not letting you in, period. I don't know you. There's nothing I can do. So then finally, like much later, they decide to say, oh, well, it could be under our company. Well, ding, ding, ding. You know what I'm saying? Dumb butt. Like, if you would have said that, then I could do something. But I'm not going to be like, oh, I don't. That's no. You know what I mean? Before I work myself up in a frenzy here. My job is not to give people the information they need to give me to let them in. Okay? So I'm not going to do that. You come up in here acting a fool, and I have to deal with you by myself. I'm not doing it. You're white. You're drunk. Get it together. So anyway, when they say that, I'm able to let them in. And then that's when, oh, so while I'm putting them on hold, I'm trying my hardest to find who these people are to help them out. They're calling me like all kinds of cuss words. And then they're like, hello. And I was like, yes, I hear everything. And that's why, but when I unlocked the door, I was able to go ahead and get the recording on my phone. Like, by then I was able to just be like, you know what, because this is not going to be good. So I recorded them. And whenever I tell the story, people are like, oh, man, that sucks. Like, I'm so sorry you had to deal with that. I'm not sorry at all that I had to deal with that. I'm actually proud of myself. I think I did well for a situation like that at 3:45 in the morning. I listened to it several times, so I know what I would do differently. But it was really good practice. And as far as I'm concerned, the practice makes me feel more secure in my ability to be codified in, like, more spontaneous situations like this. And I was shaking and everything. Like, I was like, writing messages like it was nobody's business because I was so, you know, traumatized by it. Like, I had no... You know, I'm there at 3:45 in the morning. I'm doing homework. I'm not expecting to be cussed out and for people to blame me because they went out and got drunk and lost their key and couldn't get in and were too dumb to read the sign to call to say they needed help. Like, that's not my problem. You know what I'm saying? And I was so fascinated by, like, that entire thing. You're wrong in every which way, but you're mad at me for, you know, you want me to be your whipping boy, to be your nigger so that you can feel better. Because you effed up, you know? And I just thought that was so fascinating, just watching that. And, like, and that's when, you know, in my mind, I'm just like, that's what it means to be white. You can eff everything up and just blame the niggers for it and feel better, you know? Like, no, you know? So, anyway, moving on. I learned a lot from that. But white people will give me many opportunities to try again. So, next, so at the building that I work at, all the white people have all their dogs. White people love dogs. And if you don't love dogs, they don't like you. And I don't really care. I'm indifferent about dogs. I'm not, you know what I mean? There's too many other problems for me to be pressed about a dog. So they come in, they always want you to make cooing sounds and all this kind of crap to the dogs, and I'm not doing it. You know, the treats are there. You can do whatever you're going to do. Come and go as you please. I don't care. So this white guy brings his dog, and he's like, do you like dogs? And I looked at him, and I'm like, sure. You know, and he's like, well, he wanted to show me a trick. So the cool thing, not the cool thing, one benefit or one silver lining to when everyone thinks that you're stupid, when you're actually smarter than him, is that while they're being themselves, you can study them because they don't think that you're smart enough to do that. Malcolm X talked about it in his book. Like, you know, they just think you're so dumb that you could never outsmart them. So the whole time he's showing me his tricks of his dog, I'm studying his behavior. And what I gleaned from that about white people is white people have to be in a position where they are lords or masters over everything or something, just anything. And they don't, like, they get off by, like, what I'm saying is when they see us, what I feel like when they see me, let me make it personal, is I am nothing more than a well-trained monkey. Even if I can talk well, like, I've just been trained. In any position I've ever been in and anything I've ever done, that's what they're looking at. They're not seeing a human being. They don't want to. They need to be white like that, if that's making any sense. Moving on, in the same vein, I, in a class, am in a group project that I asked this white teacher to let me be by myself. She said, no, I had to be in a group. So I picked a black male. I said, you want to be with me? And he was like, yeah. Well, two white people decided to put their names with our names. And I have two white people in my group who I didn't want, but they're there. So we've been all up, the semester started like January 17th, all up until like today. We've been doing a particular type of math. Now we have a modeling project. My codification for this, because math is not something I just like, it's not a gen ed. I need to understand it. So I'm not going to let white people mess up my grade, okay? Just to let y'all know. Like, so that's very important. When they're looking for stuff, my GPA for the math has to be good. So I'm not going to trust white people at all to do anything right. So I'm going to do the whole project myself. And the only reason I'm doing that is because it saves me the drama of trusting or thinking that white people are ever going to do anything right. I'm not going to do that. These are F-ups, so moving on. So I did that. I did all the preliminary. I did it, you know. And so when it came time for everyone to at least contribute a little bit after I've done everything, this white male who is like older, bigger, older, ogre looking like person has the audacity to get frustrated because I didn't want to sit down and show him how to do it in the calculator because I had another class. And I sat there in amazement. He didn't even know what the project was about. The project is due like the next day. We met the day before, the project is due the next day. And he had no idea what we were doing. So I had to go line by line and explain it to this person. And I was so frustrated. And not because I had to explain it, because I don't mind that. Frustrated because this same person is going to look at me and call me a nigger when I'm over here understanding this through and through enough to teach it, you know? And so I got very frustrated. And so I still gave them opportunities to contribute, you know, send me your stuff so I can put it all together. And he didn't respond to anything. So today, when we turn the project in, he's actually waiting for me outside of the classroom. I think this is so fascinating. And he has tears in his eyes and proceeds to tell me about how he let the team down and he won't do that again. This is the same rhetoric he told me from before. And he's so disappointed in himself, and he failed this other exam, and just and I sat there like, man, if I could be recording this so that cows could hear it, this is like, no, you know what I'm saying? So we moved forward. I turned in the work. He even tried to catch me afterwards because I was talking about I was in the middle of an exam. I actually had like a certain number of hours to do an exam, so I started it, went to class, and went back to the exam. So I was rushing. Like, I couldn't sit around and talk with people. So he was like, oh, so what's the – and he's trying to placate me. And I said, absolutely not. I will see you next time, you know, and I left. So here's what I'm going to throw out to the cows. What I'm thinking is to either write the professor to say, look, he didn't contribute anything to the first part. I told you I wanted to work by myself, and these are the reasons why. Or to just do what I was originally going to do, which is do the project myself anyway, and then write up my evaluations afterwards. I'm open to suggestions. But he pissed me off, and I wanted to write the email because he tried to cry. And I take that from a male or female white as a severe act of racism and terrorism. You have no business crying to me about whatever is wrong with you. You ain't black. You don't know what it's like to be black and walk around every day being smarter than half the people and everyone think that you're stupid. So I don't care what's going on in your life. Don't you dare cry in my face and think that I'm supposed to care about whatever's going on with you. So it was when he did that that I solidified that he was racist and is racist and is practicing racism by trying to make me and my melanin empathetic soul having self feel sorry for his inability to handle the situation. So I'm open to feedback if y'all want to tell me about that one. I have another one, but I feel like I talked too much and I worked myself up. So if there's time later, I'll share. Thank you.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I guess to respond with the school situation, I am a teacher at college. If that is a problem, if you want to let the professor know, that's fine. We'll just be ready for pushback. Because not that I wouldn't necessarily believe a black student, because I've seen where black students have been taken advantage of, but I would personally, I would have to be diplomatic about it. So I don't know what race your professor is. So if you're going to do that, just be prepared for pushback. Like, I would meet, you would tell me what happened. I go, okay, I'll talk to Bill on those things. I talked to Bill. So, you know, make sure you have your facts in check because Bill may come up with a lot. I had a situation like this. I think last year I had a student. Well, somebody caught the black student doing work for the white student. So I talked to both of them. And to being true, the white student did not deny it. So I failed the white student and the black student got a C because he was the one that kept coming to class and do the work. He would have got a better grade, but, you know, you have to do something. So, and then I gave him, I think I said last year, I gave him a copy of Neely Fuller's work. It's like, you need to get this together. So that's, as a professor, I just went through the kind of hear what may happen on the other side. But it is good that you have the documentation, the proof that you all did the work. And then be prepared also, since you had two white people in the group, if they decide to stick together. And, oh, it was okay. He talked to me about it, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, just be prepared for that. I guess personally, I haven't had anything, I guess, super serious in a while because I have an office. I close the door. I don't have to talk to anybody unless, you know, unless I leave the office. With my door, yay. But I do have some old incidents to share that may be helpful or insightful. I had one job. I worked at a dealership and in the back office, and they were all white women. I did not know about white women like that until I worked there because I worked at another job, big corporation with all types of people, and I hadn't had any problems. I got my promotions, my raises. I had a white boss who gave me a raise and not other people. Then when they had to cut everybody's raise, she found a way to give me a bonus. So this was all new to me. I had one, she told the boss she was afraid of me, and I just thought that was ridiculous. So I just went over and told her, I said, I'm a professional person with a license. You're not worth me losing my license. You have nothing to worry about. And went back to my desk because I guess she had a history of making other people at this place cry. I just was not one of those people. And then I had one, which I could not believe happened, but it did. It was the holiday time, and there was a white lady. She was married to a black, I guess she's still married, I don't know, to a black man. And she asked, it was Thanksgiving time, and she actually said, You are an African American. Do you know how to make sweet potato pie? I was like, my mind was blown because I never heard anything like that. I was like, oh, thinking to myself, oh, wow, this lady is nuts. I said, well, you need to go to Sara Lee. Go right into the freezer section like I do and get you a Sara Lee. That one really blew my mind. Not only because she asked me because I was African-American, but she had been married to this man for over 20 years. I don't know how you don't know how to make something he likes. I was like, wow, okay. Yeah, that job was particularly out of control. And I think for me, what made it so weird, I think I went really out of my way to be nice to people at this particular job. I don't know why. Maybe I was going to church too much, read my Bible, but I don't know. But I really went out of the way to be nice to these people. And they were just, they were horrible to each other. So it really wasn't that surprising when they treated me kind of weird. But I tried to, you know, keep to myself the best that I could. That's all that I have for now. Thank you.
Dang. We just heard earlier in the broadcast the suggestion food is one of those topics that can be apolitical and steer you away from racism, and bam, right to the sweet potato pie.
Oh.
Anybody that we have not heard from have commentary that they would like to share? Anybody we have not heard from?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, it's Lady in New York. So, yeah, it's funny that that was mentioned about the food, because came up today with a white male racist suspect. Gus, I am actually doing a volunteer training, so I don't know if that counts as workplace racism. If it doesn't, I can wait to share for Saturday. You let me know.
That's pretty much the same thing.
Okay, so at this volunteer program, just trying to learn about, like, sustainable food production, and this gentleman and his group came in later. So he's just been in this program half of the time. And today with food, I came back from lunch with soup. And he goes, "Oh." And I said, "What?" And him and the white gentleman that was next to them, these are both two white males. I think they're there for landscaping or something. And he says it's curry because, of course, white woman next to me wants to know what it is. She already knows what the soup is, I find out, and she likes the soup. But he said ill because it was curry. And I said, "Well, what are you, anti-curry?" And so the white male next time continued to make faces. And I said, "And you too?" And so the gentleman sitting directly on my right side goes, "Oh, see, now you're playing the race card." I said, "I didn't say anything about race." I said, "Were you anti-curry?" Curry is a seasoning. It's a spice. So the white woman on my left side interjects and says, "Well, I like ethnic food too." And I said, "Yeah, we all like ethnic food." Second racist, same white male. We had mounted insects, which we had to identify, you know, which could be beneficial or harmful for your food production or landscape. So we're sharing them. We're in groups. The white woman on my left side was in another group, but somehow she started sharing, and this passing back and forth began with me in the middle, in which this white Mel takes his left hand and literally pushes them down, his arm, on my breast to go past this. This one wasn't in a mouth. It was in some kind of valve or some kind of container with Purell to preserve it. And pushed this man's arm away. And I said, "How long are you going to hold that?" And he says, "Hold what?" I didn't even notice. I said, "You were literally pushing me." And he goes, "Oh, you'll be all right." So that was the end of that. White woman on the other side quickly began to change the subject. "Oh, well, It's the best class anyway. The other ones, we never did this. I don't know what that has to do with this man pushing his arm down on me. And I don't even know why she was, I don't know why she's so interested. She always tries to sit next to me. It's just weird. She's always trying to talk to me. I don't even remember her name. She remembers my name. I'm like, okay, I guess she thinks she's my buddy. So just very interesting, these interactions with this particular gentleman. He makes sure he saves a seat for me, and he told me this today because the class is so crowded. Once his group came in, there's actually no more tables, and now there's like two or three rows of people just sitting in chairs. And I didn't know that he was, until today, saving the seat for me. So I thought that was interesting as well. So just very weird. We only have two more of these training sessions left before we can volunteer. And I will be very happy to be done with him, because he's just getting a little bit too, he's way over the top with being in my space, this guy, and her, and this woman. They're always in my face. She likes to take my things, this white woman, read my notes. And both of them today also were reading in my notes, but with my notes I draw. So, it was about landscaping, so I'm drawing flowers and being weird and, like, doing thought bubbles of what the speaker was talking about. And so they're reading them, and this is after coming back from the lunch. And so the white gentleman is saying, oh, well, why don't you put me in here, draw me? And I'm like, why were you in my notes? So very strange, and that's my workplace racism.
I think that came up earlier today as well, the nosiness of white folks being snooping all around your notes, your computer, your books, newspaper, anything really, briefcase, purse, backpack. Just be hyper aware of that. I know that you said this was a volunteer situation, but I mean, that's pretty much the same thing as a workplace situation if whites are present. But just be really mindful of that when you're in a workstation or in that sort of environment with whites, that they are going to be conducting deep-level surveillance on you. Let's see if other folks that we have not heard from, if you have comments, questions you would like to share, feel free. We should have ample time to make sure we get everybody. We shouldn't miss anyone today. So all the people that dialed in with a hand up that we have not heard from, feel free.
Hello? Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, how you doing, Gus, and to the family? I drive a truck for a living, and I got a relative. Well, my nephew, he works over at me, and him work at the same company. I forwarded him some clips of the cows, and you know, I try to share some things that that I've learned. And he just got out of a tragic relationship, so I don't think it it didn't sink in too good with him. But he had an accident the other day, and he called me up, told me he had an accident. He ran into somebody, and you know, went out here and told the white folks' truck up, and don't realize that he's fired. I told him, I said, when he first came over, I said, read the handbook. So he tells me what happened, and I said, did you take any pictures? No. Did you, I told him that's going to be the first thing they're going to ask you, man, when you get back to the terminal. So he said, well, I had to put the fire out. The truck caught on fire and this and that. And I just wasn't thinking. I said, okay. So he gets up and goes down to the terminal the day that he had to catch a bus and go back down to the terminal. The safety man, for some reason, the safety man wasn't in the day. I guess they didn't want to just tell him that he was fired, you know, but safety man wasn't in the bay, so he had to go back. He's still thinking that he's still employed, but he's the type of victim where you really can't tell him nothing. So I just sat back. I just got to the point where, you know, it's a lot of victims out here, and, you know, they don't want to be helped. So I just, you know, I understand, you know, because I'm a victim myself. I understand what's going on out here, but I'm not trying to save these victims, you know. I'm sorry. I just can't. I'm at the point of my life. I just turned 48 years old. I'm watching out for me. I'm not trying to save no victims. I'm sorry, Gus. I'm sorry, family. But, you know, the more I try to share with some of these victims, the less because they don't want to, some of these victims, they don't, victims don't want to be saved. So I tried to share, tried to pass on some knowledge and everything to my nephew, but I guess he just got to learn the hard way, you know. He got me upset, but he did it to himself. So I tried to, you know, I tried to school him and everything and what was going on over here. And I said, read the handbook. I got that. When I started listening to the cows, he said, read your handbook. If it's just 5 pages a day, I started doing that. So I read when they came out with a new handbook, I read it. When I stop and do a break, I read 2 pages and everything. I read the new handbook they passed out, and that's the first thing they said. You have an accident, take pictures, and this and that, not you're going to be fired. And, you know, some accidents they'll forgive you for, but if you don't do that, they're going to fire you. They say that right in the handbook. But outside of that, he didn't get hurt. Nobody got killed, and I'm happy about that. But as far as just reaching out, trying to save victims, I just can't do it. They got to save themselves. Thanks for letting me share.
Dang. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That happened, but I guess at minimum, that is, I do put that in every description. I try to, when I post the event on Facebook and social media and what have you, that's one of the things that I always try to include when we talk about workplace racism policy and procedure. That is very important. That is a piece of your armor on the job, just knowing what the policy and procedure is. That can be so helpful before you have problems. Generally, it's same thing. I think Mr. Edward Williams, where he says, you know, you want to read his book before you have an issue on the job. Same thing with policy and procedure. You want to read that before there is a problem you'll be in a much better position. And I know myself, when I was more confused about racism, I didn't think about that, you know, paying attention, go back, let me revisit what says in the policy and procedure. Like, I just didn't think that way. And I don't remember any older people explaining that to me, that, you know, that's really important. Like, you want to check that out. Like, these white people, and particularly, this is a part of your self-defense for dealing with white people. No one ever said that to me about being on the job, that they're not going to follow some of the things that are in this book. They're going to come and try to hold you to every single period, sentence, paragraph. That's the way that they're going to try to adjudicate anything that comes up with you on the job. Like, you should really know what's in that book. I just hadn't had anyone present it. I wish he had taken your advice. Maybe if he had taken a few photographs, he would, you know, things would have worked out better. But policy and procedure, and exactly as he stated, you can just read 5 pages a day. Don't have to read the whole thing. Sometimes they can be a little chunky, I know, but just do 10 minutes, 5 minutes of reading. You take 2 weeks, you'll get through it. I promise it will be to your benefit. Other people that we have not heard from at all, any folks we have not heard from at all?
May I be heard?
May I be heard? Yeah, ladies first.
Thank you. Hello to everyone. Greetings. And I just wanted, I have, I think it's actually 3 observations. One of the observations was, it's actually to add on to something that I had mentioned a couple of shows ago on workplace racism, just speaking about my friend and how there was this white guy at his job who was stealing merchandise, and then he ends up, the white guy ends up disappearing. Well, my friend also told me that the guy ended up, like, leaving the job or going AWOL, basically, after he steals an entire truck and tries to take it to the scrap, some scrap reseller or scrap buyer, and his employer had to intercept the truck, had to call the company to make sure that they didn't buy whatever materials this guy had stolen. And then after that, that's when he stopped coming to work. And apparently they still haven't caught him, what have you. So that's one. And another one from dealing with my workplace and just listening to some of the other callers, especially the issues that they've been having with white people being in their personal space. I actually had to train another white lady, I tried to be very professional, almost like had like a dry tone of my voice when I was training her. She'd laugh and try to joke. I wasn't there for that. I was just trying to teach her whatever she needs to know. But sometimes she would laugh. She did this like at least once. She would laugh, and then she would put her hand on my leg, like just to emphasize, like, you know, how funny whatever she said was. Still didn't laugh. Still wasn't joking. So I definitely feel like with my demeanor, my new demeanor that I've been trying to maintain at my job, it just seems like some of the white people there, they really are trying their hardest to either get me to smile. I've noticed that, because I really don't smile anymore, or even, like, I don't know, just seem jolly, I guess. I don't know what they assume that how I felt before, but they'll keep talking to me, or they'll, you know, keep smiling at me until I have to force a smile, I have to force a smile on my face. That actually happened to me today when, like, one of my supervisors he said hello. I said hello back and just, you know, tried to keep it pushing. And he brought up, oh, well, you've been doing such good work and this, that, and the other. And it was kind of, like, meaningless to me because, you know, I don't care about the accolades. I'm just trying to be here, do my work good enough to where I can get my paycheck. That was the second thing. The last observation that I had was actually in the past when I used to be a little bit more confused, and I was actually watching the news, and this is what jogged my memory about it, was I used to speak to some of my white coworkers, and one of the times the issue of Penn State got brought up, and a coworker, he was a white male. He was so mad that the players, they got to miss out on playing in some big game, and the school was fined and everything. And it's like, you know, well, this is just the action of one man, and I don't understand why they had to take it out on everybody. And I remember listening to a past show where the guest brought up, you know, this, and I think the other, the guest also, like, this could have been, you know, all these different children could have been affected. And yet, and still, you still have people who are like, you know what, that doesn't matter. It was just the one guy, and, you know, they only cared about football, about the sports program. But then when I was watching the news today, apparently Jerry Sandusky's son is also now implicated as far as some type of sexual abuse. So it just kind of, like, really resonates with me that it's not just one person knows this is, and it's not just, you know, he did this all by himself, especially if his son was also involved. So it's hard for me to believe that nobody else knew. And it just really just, like I said, it just really makes help me to understand that they don't care what happens to, you know, children at all, just as long as they're entertained. I did have something else, but now it just slipped my, the other thing is, something that Emmy said that really resonated with me was that, you know, how white people, they really do look at us as just trained monkeys or whatever derogatory term that you want to insert. And I'm also have heard at least more than I would like to have heard, like, white people saying, well, you know, you speak so well, as if it, you know, it just really, now me thinking about it now, just really makes me understand that, you know, we're all supposed to be as dumb and as ignorant as they envision us in their minds. So that's all I had. Thank you for letting me share.
Good hearing that. I know the male caller who spoke simultaneously, thank you for your patience. You can proceed. I just wanted to share briefly with your training this white woman and her, I guess, chuckling and putting her hand on your knee and that sort of thing. Same thing we've talked about with that touching. Everybody has to kind of develop their own code. I would, in this environment, Jerry Sandusky was just mentioned, right? In this environment with all sorts of sexual predators, I would, on the job in particular, enforce like a real stringent no touching rule. Like, we're not doing anything more than a handshake. Like, you're not touching my leg. We're not doing shoulder rubs. Like, that's just me in terms of my code and what I think would be constructive. But everybody, certainly you have to come up with your own rules. Again, some people work in environments where there's more touching and what have you. Hey, some people work in environments where they're drinking alcohol on the job. You've had people talk about that and, you know, doing drugs on the job. So, hey, what's the big deal with a hug or a pat on the back or anything else that might happen? But if this is a 9-to-5, we're supposed to be businesslike, professional, this is not, you know, a strip club or what have you, well, then let's behave in a businesslike manner. You don't need to have your hand on my thigh, male or female. We don't need to do a whole lot of hugging, any hugging. I would just really encourage that. And like I said before, I do not do any touching on the job. And just be clear about that. Like I said, everybody can come up with their own code. The male caller that spoke up simultaneously, did you have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thanks. Greetings to the caller, 2812 from Virginia. A couple things I wanted to share, and I'll try to be brief. I'm in the mortgage business. I had a client that I was meeting with yesterday, she's a older white woman, and the agent that referred me to the client was like, you know, this woman, you know, she's not going to be what you think she is, because I didn't know she was a white woman until the agent told me. And when she got there, she was like, the agent did tell me, by the way, the reason I bring that up, the agent said, oh, yeah, her boyfriend is black. And she's probably going to give you some very, like, flirtatious energy. And I was like, are you sure? And sure enough, she walks through the door, and she's like, oh, hey, honey, how you doing? Oh, this woman has to get her, like, 55. And I'm a little, I don't want to say a lot, but I'm a lot younger than that. And so she's like, oh, hey, honey, how you doing? And this house had a problem. They just came from a home inspection, you know, inspecting the property to see if it's in good condition. And she then says, she's talking really loudly, and I'm in an office that is not even mine. I asked another manager to use an office because this office is about maybe an hour and a half from where I'm normally stationed. So she's just talking really loudly, and it was really just, it was so tacky. And then out of the blue, she's like, yeah, you know, my mama is, you know, my mom and my daddy, they're old white people, and you know how old white people are. And I'm just looking at this woman and saying to myself, this is that whole ideal with a black guy, so I think I can talk to this guy in the same manner that I talk to my quote-unquote significant other. And I just sat there and said, no, ma'am, I'm not sure specifically what you're talking about. I just need to get these documents from you and so forth and so on. And she just kept on going on with the honey child and all this other kind of stuff. And it was just real tacky. And she was just another example of exactly why I'm not attracted, nor will I ever be. And it's just disgusting to deal with a white female. The other thing was that I had a meeting this morning. I am, quote-unquote, I've gotten some title of a vice president of some group that I run, only black person in the room, but there was a white woman, suspected racist, that shared some good information about working, and I just wanted to share some of it real quick and just things that we should keep on. I know a lot of us deal with different things at the job, but, you know, most of us are going there to either try to get a career, try to solve this problem, but also to make some extra money to feed our families. And she actually handed out this list of items, and it was really, really constructive in just making sure that you have a household budget, you check up on homeowners insurance, you check your auto insurance, you check your health insurance, your tax withholdings, do you have a will. But then one thing she did mention was life insurance, and the reason why I'm just bringing that up is because of the system of racism, white supremacy, we are just liable for just more. We're going to die earlier. Different things are going to happen to us on the job. I know that there was a caller that mentioned a couple weeks that he was hurt on the job. And I have disability insurance and a lot of extra things that do not cost a lot of money. And the reason why these things don't really cost me a lot of money is because I was a black man. I used to do a whole lot of showing off. So when Mr. Fuller, you know, talked about showing off, if you looked it up in the dictionary, that would be me. The moment that I made that not a priority anymore, it really opened up a lot more in my finances, and I'm able to do some more constructive things, which is have more insurance to protect myself from any sort of emergencies that might come on the job or with your family. So I just wanted to share that, and those are things that you want to do. The last thing I did want to mention was I have a lot of time during my day. Because I kind of work for myself. I'm commissioned. Nobody really bothers me except on email. I don't really talk to people. So I kind of literally, and this is not a joke, I probably listen to the cows maybe 12 hours a day from when I wake up, and I listen to old episodes and stuff like that. And on my way home today, I'm listening to the recast of the Half Is Never Told, and there was a section when the author was talking about in antebellum slavery, how the slaves were in the chains and they were getting annoyed and irritated with each other because, you know, they were pooping on each other and you know, nobody was speeding up in the line and all this other kind of stuff. And sometimes you just have a red light go on. And that's kind of what we have to deal with every day with other victims, because even though we're not in antebellum slavery anymore, we're still being terrorized. Some of us are coming from environments that are not healthy. And every single day, you know, people are, you know, other victims are walking through the door, and that's what those attitudes are like. And so it just reminded me of what the gentleman had mentioned earlier about not saving people. I would say that the reason why that gentleman is probably not aware of what's going on is, number one, he's involved in a tragic arrangement, but number two, he's being terrorized. And it's extremely difficult when you have people that are constantly every single day to be able to kind of take the time and to actually see where they are. Because I just look at antebellum slavery like now. Everybody's coming from these crazy, crazy environments to where we're being bombarded every single day, and racism is in front of us, and all of us as victims are just trying to get through it. So, you know, be patient. Just keep that in mind and just always try to share as much constructive information as possible, and you'll be really, really surprised. I mean, all of us at one point were extremely confused. I know I was, but I just wanted to share that. And sorry if I went over my time. Thanks, Gus.
Indeed. There was a listener, she wrote in, this is a black female, she said that she is considering wearing her natural hair into work. She has apprehensions about whether or not she'll be mistreated for doing so, and she wanted input, feedback. Do you all think this is something she should pursue, wearing her natural hair to work?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I would suggest if she's noticed any other females in the company who wear their natural hair. And I would even, if you see a customer come in with natural hair, I would say, what do you think of her hair? I have, you know, I wear my natural hair, and when I was working, and even in the setting I'm in now, white people get excited, like, more than anybody. People like my hair. My haircut is, you know, most females don't wear, like, designs in their hair. Like how Usher has his hair, I get my hair cut like that, and I was thinking with the parts and with the zigzags and all that going on that it would look professional, and then I just didn't care because it looked good. And I get complimented all the time by white people, black people, males, females. So I guess it really depends on your environment. I've heard people say before that they've had experiences where white people make them feel bad or like it's unprofessional. I've only had one time where I got a vibe where a young white nurse who was interviewing, I don't know if she thought I was like, something was wrong with me, but she made a nasty face, like something wasn't clean, or like if she thought that I was some kind of strange person. And I think it was because of my hair. But other than that, white people for me go over the top with how beautiful I look and how unique my hair is. So I think just observe if you've seen anyone else with natural hair in the workplace, or customers who come in, because I haven't. I've had more positive, if you want to say that, experience with my natural hair, especially being that the hairstyles that I wear would be considered more like masculine, because these are like cut, these are sharp cuts that I wear. You know, I have to go to the barbershop every 2 weeks, and people like it. They see me, and they really like it. So I don't know. But I'll listen to see what some of the other female callers have to say.
Hello.
Can I be heard? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Thank you so much. I would say if you feel comfortable, like the previous caller said, I will wear it because they wear their natural hair to work. It's just straight and stringy. Thank you.
What I was going to say was that I would definitely check within, like, the policies and procedures, just like Gus says, because I've heard of other places where certain hairstyles, i.e., like our type of hairstyles, because I wear my hair natural as well, that's not considered like neat or clean or whatever. So I would definitely do that. And then also I know with me, like what we have been talking about before throughout this whole time is that white people like to study you. And that's something that I have noticed a lot is whenever you change your hair, they always will they'll always comment on it. So if that doesn't, it's not something that will bother the person who wrote in, then I would say definitely go for it. But then also, like I said, just double check and see if there's not some type of subliminally racist procedure or policy that says you have to wear your hair like up in a bun or something ridiculous. Thank you. That's all I have.
May I be heard?
Can I be heard?
I heard both of you. Let's get the female caller first.
Hi, I would definitely recommend the email to wear her hair natural. White people look at you the same if you're in a blonde wig or some box braids or your hair is straight. I know because I wear my hair straight, curly afro or braids, and I still feel the same as far as treatment, or I don't really care what they think. Yeah, maybe there might be a policy or something, but even then, that's pretty ridiculous. So I would just encourage that sister to do whatever she feels like, because me personally, naturally is always better. Thank you for listening.
Appreciate. Thank you for sharing. Was there a male caller who also was going to respond?
Yes. I would say, yeah, definitely check the policy and procedure. I have a part-time job. I do security, and my sister just recently told me that a black male that applied for Rutgers North, basically for a public safety officer, he was told that he'd have to cut his locks in order to get the job. And where I do security part-time in Pennsylvania, that's not their policy, but their policy does say that if you have long hair, it has to be either up in a bun or shoulder length. And I've been told also that with the company that I'm with, two employees, that black males that came in, they told me that they had to cut their locks. So I'm just going to go off the policy and procedure because I'm transitioning into from an afro into a lock. So I'm just going to say, hey, it says this in a book, and if it goes any further than that, then I'll just keep stressing what it says in the book. Other than that, I mean, white people, they emulate whatever we do. So I don't know if they may have a problem with it, but then again, like, they pretend that they have a problem with everything that we do, but then somewhere along the line, they're following everything that we do. There's a white male that worked at my full-time job with locks, so I'd say don't worry about it. Just look into the policy procedure and just be true to yourself. And as long as it doesn't affect your money, just go ahead and do what you have to do. Thank you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I'd kind of like to chime in. Sometimes I don't really like talking about hair, but I think one thing to consider with whatever it is that you choose to do with your hair, whoever chooses to do anything with their hair, that there's nothing wrong with whatever it is that you choose. Like, sometimes you can feel like you're selling out on yourself or doing something if you, like, don't wear your natural hair, or you do, or, you know, like, there's so much around the hair being a statement and all that, that if you want to do it, totally do it. If you have reservations about it, it doesn't mean anything about you. It just might mean that you understand the system a little bit. And I say that I've done everything with my hair, from being, like, completely bald to, like, rocking awesome wigs, like, whatever. Do it. And it's like a certain place. Like, you can switch it up and you have that freedom to do so. But another thing to remember is, no matter what you do, whether you wear your natural hair or you wear a weave or a sew-in or whatever it is, at the end of the day, at the beginning of the day, we're still just black people, negros. And so that's not going to make people have any more respect or any less respect for you if you choose to do one or the other. That's it. Thanks.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I would say first decide within yourself on, you know, about how you're going to present yourself from the aspect that's called hair in the first place. And policy and procedures, of course, and this, and even if the policy and procedures state something that can be interpreted as not being supposed to wear your hair in that way, you may decide to challenge it. I know of a co-worker that actually challenged the fire department with what is called a lip beard. If anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about, it's a small piece of hair that's underneath your lower lip. And they sent them home, but within the time that he came back to work, they took it off the books, primarily because of him challenging the policy. Those are some of my ideas as far as with the hair. Be prepared also for compliments and the put downs. Sometimes the compliments are worse than the put downs. especially if white people are doing the complimenting. They're not doing it for your best interest when they are saying the things that they're saying. To give you some ideas on that, just study what Mr. Fuller says about the subject, about white people and wishing that they were black people or non-white people. The compliments can be sometimes worse than the put downs about it. And if you got some kind of reasoning on why you're doing it, then yeah, do it. Thank you.
One thing I was going to say, it seemed just from what I got from reading her email that she's been thinking about doing this. Maybe she wants to do this, but her fear is that, you know, the whites on her job will cause her trouble or even terminate her. I do consistently say stay in the question lane. You could ask. Either your supervisor or if they have a human resources department, you can just ask, is there a problem if I wear my hair natural? If you feel you need a visual aid, if you have a picture of yourself with natural hair or how you would want to wear your hair, or if they have other black employees that work there, if any black females happen to be there that have natural hair, have them how Ms. Johnson, the way that she has it, is that a problem? And then you'll know if they say no, it's not a problem. You could get it in writing, or you could record it, or just document that you talk to such and such in human resources, or you talk to your supervisor on this date and time. They said it's not an issue, and now, hey, you can move forward and at your leisure, and you know, with no ambiguity, shouldn't be any reason to stress that you've got it, you know, authorized that this is not an issue.
I
heard both of you. Lady, you want to proceed?
I agree 100% with what you said, Gus, and even the firefighter, because regardless of what you do with your hair or appearance, white people are looking, and even if they are quote-unquote positive, eventually they'll wind up asking you to touch your hair, whether you wear whatever style, they will be inquiring about your hair. Even if you have your head covered, they will be inquiring. So, yeah, I would definitely just, you know, not beat around the bush now that I'm thinking about it. Just ask. Look in the book, ask, and I'll possibly bring that picture in. That sounds like a really good idea.
Sounds good. I was going to, if there's time, I was going to comment on some of the previous callers and their analysis of their workplace racism that I heard earlier.
Let me make sure we haven't missed anybody. Is anybody
okay
that we haven't heard from at all?
I wanted to comment on the lady that got the
by her hair going natural. Make sure you have some money stacked up. if they show you the dough, you will be ready. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Can I be heard regarding the hair as well?
Yes, sir.
I believe Neely Fuller made the statement about message hair. I think you can go ahead and fire up your Google and go into YouTube, and there will be clips of Neely Fuller mentioning explicitly how we ought not to be paying so much attention to our hair. I recently, in the last 3 or 4 years, joined the bald brigade. I'm just purely bald, and you know what? It's great. I don't have to think about what hairstyle that I'm wearing, and I don't have to worry about brushing my hair. I don't have to worry about getting my edges on point. It's great. And those who do have their hair, you're very fortunate, but at the same time, I do not envy the burden that you have on your head. Thank you.
I know. Is there anyone that we missed? Anyone that we've not heard from at all this broadcast?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, my name is Keith. I'm from New York. And a couple of weeks ago, I sent you some pictures of the bathroom at my job, like a porta potty that work on a construction site. Do you recall?
Yes, sir.
All right, so basically on my job, we have, like, different kinds of people. So my company is primarily non-white people, mainly Hispanic, who I think identify as being white, but then we do have a lot of people, black people, who come from the Caribbean. And I'm just going to go over what happened today. So today I went to work, and they had me working with a Hispanic male, white Hispanic male, and for the past 2 days, I've been working by myself. I've only been doing this kind of work, electrical work, for 2 years. And he's been doing it for about 6, and he as a helper has been doing it for about 4 years, another black male. And he made the decision to leave me to do the work by myself. And, you know, like kind of like unsupervised. So I wasn't sure if it was getting done right. But anyway, when they came back to work with me, I noticed that the white Hispanic male, he keeps saying N-word over and over again, like almost like he's having a sugar rush, like a child would, I was sitting next to him and I was stunned. Like, I was like, well, this guy's crazy. And then he keeps saying to the other black male, you know, suck my such and such, and he keeps saying this over and over again. And I talked to this black male about this. He was like, you know, he said, I didn't know how serious that was until I went to jail for the first time. And that became a problem. And I spoke to one of the bosses about it, and they moved me from working with him. And when, like really quick, everybody on the job seemed to have a problem with, like, oh, my gosh, yeah, I knew it was a problem. And I was like, you know, nobody mentioned it. And I wasn't sure if that was the correct thing to do, but, you know, I guess sometimes I'm more refined than others, but my initial reaction, you know, was definitely uncodified, for sure. So I want to know if you guys have any suggestions in how to deal with, like, unrefined white people, because it sounds like you guys have really refined white people on your job. Like, they're conscious about how to avoid, about their words or what they might say. It's kind of subtle, but on this job site, like, Where I work, they're drawing swastikas and writing Trump everywhere. One of the guys has a swastika tattooed on his ear. They have iron crosses on their cars and stuff, so it's kind of like they're really unrefined.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
To the previous caller, my suggestion is update your LinkedIn and find a new place of employment. There is nothing that you can do in a situation where suspected white supremacists, or rather, I don't want to name call or anything like that, but yeah, these people who are openly practicing white supremacy are feeling comfortable and emboldened to practice in an unrefined manner. There is nothing that a victim can do to reverse or stop this trend. The only thing that you can be is further victimized by this environment. So seek another place of employment. There is nothing that is forcing you to be there.
Get out that environment. Get out that environment. Try to change your career. I suggest you try to go get your CDL. Thank you.
Is this a situation that, you know, you see yourself working here for another year, another 5 years? Like, how long did you see yourself remaining at this job?
Well, this job site in particular, they said that it would go on for maybe another year, because in the construction world, you move around a lot. So you may be at this job site, and then in 2 months you're at another job site, or 6 months you're somewhere else. But what I found was I was working at another company, and I forgot this important part of the story, because I heard it earlier. I was talking, the guys got me so mad, so initially I wanted to hurt him physically, you know, but I just refrained and I just thought about my family, and I was like, yo, you know what, you know, there's better reasons. Actually, you know what, I wouldn't have felt bad, but I didn't want to get in trouble with the law, so I didn't do that, and I asked him, I was like, are you mad that Trump is going to send you back to your country? And his immediate, oh, well, you're going back to Africa and you're going to be climbing trees for bananas. And I was like, oh, the monkey thing. So, but that wasn't, you know, like I worked at another company before and it was the same thing. I was working with the owner's son, and every day he was calling me a gorilla. And I was thinking to myself, you know, this is man, he's just saying this. Maybe he wants to get me fired. Maybe he wants to provoke a fight. And then eventually he did make some comments that he, like, almost like he wanted to fight me. And he did admit to being racist. And it all happened in within the same amount of time. But, you know, I've been listening to your show, Nearly Fuller's show, for some time, so I expected it. And I don't know, my reaction when I expected is more so like, oh, man, they said that was going to happen, rather than, you know, sometimes I can maybe lose focus and get emotional, but sometimes it's just like, oh, man, God said that would happen. Well, a monkey thing, oh, there it goes. And then, you know, they just blatantly wanting to become violent. So I thought to myself today, I was like, you know, I'm in the wrong profession, because the people who work in this kind of in construction, they're really, really unrefined. They are like, it's something I've only dealt with when I was working around white teenagers, particularly white people with whose families come from Spanish speaking countries. I'll just say that they seem to be the most hostile.
I can just say, towards kind of what you mentioned at the end, my understanding, the entire construction business is filled with kind of crude less refined race soldiers. Like, that's kind of that's stereotypically kind of the way I think. I think, you know, kind of how it is, not just my perception, but I mean, I think that is based in fact, and kind of how that whole business has operated for many, many years, and even, you know, keeping black people out of a lot of the unions and what have you, even getting access to that type of employment. So my kind of the same thing that I would tell anybody in any other profession, like, if you leave that job site, it's probably going to be more of the same with another crew or anything in the construction business. I would think it's going to be a lot of that. You go to the porta potty and nigger this, nigger that, swastika this, white power, you know, on and on, that Obama and everything else. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, if you're going to stay in that profession, I mean, I think it's going to be a lot of that. I was going to say, too, any profession, really any time, that's one thing, understanding that this is what racism, white supremacy is, like just constantly being abused and mistreated and the name calling and all of that. But really important, that's, and I always put that in the description too, managing our emotions, where we are not letting racists get us angry. That's a big part, in my view, of being a professional counter-racist soldier. If you are in any aspect of armed forces anywhere in the world, it's not, wait a minute, they called me a name, or they threw a rock at me, so, you know, forget whatever our plan was. I'm going to, you know, you don't just call me a name. I mean, you just cannot operate as a professional soldier that way at all. And that's the same mindset that we have to have. Saving face should not compute in terms of being a professional counter-racist soldier. We're not about responding to insults at all. Nigger this, you're an ape, you're a monkey, you're a coon, go back to Africa. Like, we're not trading insults, and, you know, I'm not upset. It didn't hurt my feelings. If anything, I'm going to have my tactical pen at the ready, because it's seeming like, you know, you might want to escalate things. I turn my recorder on, so I have this documented, or I'm taking notes as you're writing. If anything, maybe I have a question. You know, so what should be done with me? What do you propose be done with niggers or apes or coons or whatever it is? That might be about it. You know, I wouldn't be upset. I would just record. And then maybe you want to say, we talked about that before, you record all of this, or the guy that was saying nigger, you know, every second or what have you, can record that. If you want to play that back at some point, or if you want to file a lawsuit, if you stay in this business for a year, you could have a whole year of recordings. That, I think somebody just did that. There was a construction site in Washington, D.C., where they had nooses, and I think a lawsuit did come up there. But, I mean, that's what I mean. That's what I think the whole construction business is filled with. So, you know, if you're going to be there, I would think you're going to have to be codified, because, yeah, Mr. Fuller, he just talked about that, where he thinks that's going to be a new strategy to have exactly what happened to you, people provoking you to get angry, to get upset, so that you can not only lose your job, but that they can call the police and put some sort of assault charge on you, so you can, you know, go be locked up and serve some time and make some furniture or what have you, be away from your family for a number of years. I mean, that's, you know, that's the plan. That's what they're looking to do. Let me check, since we have about 30 minutes left. Anybody that we have not heard from at all, just to make sure we didn't miss any callers. Anyone that we have not heard from at all?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I want to start out by saying I think it was a part about the, I guess, the non-black people and stuff like that, and the value that people place based on the amount of melanin that you have. I definitely have noticed that on my job as well, and different, like, in different types of ways. So that's definitely a phenomenon where I happen to work at. But my first incident was there was this black female. She's been having, I guess, somewhat of a beef or whatever, or, you know, a lot of disagreements. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Sorry about that.
All right. Yes, she's been having a bunch of disagreements with our supervisor, And she was just, she went into the hospital with some medical issues. And when she got out, she said that that the supervisor, I guess, was asking her something about what she was eating and or drinking. But primarily what kind of baffled her was when she said, you know, well, what are you drinking? And when she was telling me this, I guess she the white supervisor was saying that she was, I guess, drinking some kind of alcohol or something. So I guess she was or felt insulted by that. So I don't know whether or not they've talked that out or whatever, but she was just basically saying that she felt like she was spoken to as though she was a child. Like, you know, she was basically saying, like, you're not my parent. So, you know, I'm just listening to this. And I thought about that dynamic of how we are in the position of children. So that's how she was pretty much venting about that incident. Like she was, like it was words of condescension, basically. So my next incident was there was this white female that walked into the break room and she said, man, it smells like an Indian outside of India or something. So I was like, what does that mean? Like, it smells like some kind of curry or something. And I was like, well, is that a good thing, bad thing? And she said, that's terrible. And that was in that one. And it was another similar one where this white female was showing off a picture, I guess, of her ex-boyfriend or fiance. And, you know, it was another female on the picture. And apparently she said this was a non-white person. So, she was saying that she had a mustache or something. And then I was like, I said, oh, really? And she was like, yeah, she's ugly and she's Indian. So I said, so are you saying that Indians are ugly, you know? And she was like, you know, no, just her. And I'm like, well, if it's just her, then why say she's ugly because she's Indian? And then, you know, she didn't answer the question. And the next incident was I was having a conversation with my older supervisor, who's now retired. And one of the last conversations we had, he was talking about, you know, who's going to carry the torch, so to speak, about making these pretty much flagrant type of jokes and whatnot, like about females and, you know, sexual jokes. And he says, well, you know, I'm not politically correct or whatever the term is. And I guess he was trying to make it seem like I should do it. So, you know, I started asking questions. And I said, do you mean them kind of jokes you talk about females and, you know, black people and stuff like that? And he says, well, I guess you can say that. And I said, now, didn't you get reported through all these years, the 15 years you've been here making these jokes? And he says, yeah, you know, they went to the administrators to the administrators about me, but it didn't really do too much. You know, I mean, he was revealing some truth, you know. So, so I said, well, now if I started telling these jokes, do you think the same results would be for me? And then he didn't answer the question. He kind of dodged it, you know. And he told my mom that he said, you know, your son asks a lot of questions. You know, he's very smart, but he said, sometimes I did not answer them. So, I've been thinking about what that meant. So he basically admitted to dodging the questions, not answering, basically, you know, being deceitful. And that's pretty much all I have for now. Thank you.
That is hilarious. I was thinking since, number one, I think we had food brought up again where it got to racism with the curry. And I think we've had curry brought up twice where someone had a problem with that and some sort of racial conversation ensued. So that's three different times that food has been brought up and it led to racism. But this white guy not answering your questions and then going to tell your mom, who works in the same place he said before, goes to tell your mom, like, oh, your son asks a lot of questions. I felt like that is plantation dialogue. Like, that's the sort of thing I feel like a white enslaver would have went and told, like, his winch, like, yeah, your boy asked a lot of questions. I'm going to sell him tomorrow. I feel like that conversation has probably happened many times where, yes, we're going to make sure we do some extra beating on him so he stops asking all those questions. But then for him to admit that, yeah, I didn't answer a lot of his questions. Like, that's wow. Sterling illustration of a racist man on display in the workforce. I think the earlier incident where you talked about a victim where she said, I think that she felt like they were talking to her like she was a child. That sort of condescension is very, very common. I think that even happened to former President Obama frequently as well, Michelle Obama as well. Something, again, that we should expect. You can have different codes. I think that has come up even a few times during the course of the conversation today. And just asking questions, always the way to go, asking questions. Anybody else that we have not heard from at all? Awesome. I think we got everybody. I'm going to see if I can ask my four quick questions, and then I know I think Mr. Steele and retired firefighter, I think they had additional comments. We will get their comments and anybody else if they have anything they want to get in before we wrap up. My quick questions, if everyone is still present, the caller at 4243, I think you were talking about training the white woman, and she was laughing and joking, and she put her hand on your knee, and you were just trying to have a real blunt presentation, right? Just flat voice. This is what it is. Not going to joke with you at all. I think you said you didn't say anything about her putting her hand on your knee. How did you feel about her putting her hand on your knee?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I was definitely uncomfortable. It was just like, my main issue is that I know, like, I've been trying to get myself into asking questions, but at my job, their main thing is if you do ask questions, they are constantly diverting. They don't ever answer the question. But, like, with the white female, I even, like, kind of moved away because I kind of had to be a little bit closer to kind of help her with the keyboard and the computer and everything. And so I just kind of moved away a little bit, but it seemed like she did not quite still get the hint. And I'm also the one, like, from several months back when I made the comment about the other white female that I used to talk to and how she would always, like, poke me in my chest. So it's kind of like getting ridiculous with, like, just the white females are the ones that I have the most problem with about the personal space or putting their hands on me. So it's always catches me off guard. Like, I don't really know how to address it and not put myself in, like, a bad position because I'm not necessarily in office. So when I have to go in and train them, they're more, I'm always concerned that since they're closer, since they have more easily, since the supervisor is easily accessible to them, I don't know how they're going to make my job any harder if I come off completely rude or as rude as I would like to be, basically.
I think that's one of those, and some of the times we talked about it before, where a lot of people feel that apprehension about speaking up or saying something because they don't want to get in more trouble or put themselves in a position to be to face retaliation. But I definitely think than just saying, you know, hey, I do not want to be touched. This is unwanted touching in the workplace. We can proceed, be courteous, let me know if I can be of assistance, but I do not want any sort of unnecessary, unwanted touching. That needs to stop. I think that can be stated firmly, respectfully, and that's not, you know, insubordination. I think that can, in my opinion, can and should be done, because whites, it's been my experience, and I think we've even had examples where it tends to escalate. Many instances, it ends up not just being the hand on the knee or what have you. It will escalate to more forms of abuse, or just continued with that sort of thing. I think we had the black female who was talking about the white woman who just kept hugging her and just kept doing it, kept doing it, kept doing it, kept doing it. The caller, see if I can get through all my questions. Lady in upstate New York, I guess it was just an observation, the incident where the people that you were working with in this volunteer setting, I guess they were a physical contact again, and it was kind of brushed off, like, you'll be all right, no big deal. Just all of that, I would be real serious about that. Like, anything that involves touching, I would take that very seriously on the job. Just not something to play around with in terms of personal space. I think white people there, I hear that all the time, where they're asserting a lot of rights in the workplace about personal space and just everything about making sure that they're being respected. So we, at minimum, like, hey, let's be real careful. You shouldn't have your hands on me at all in a workplace. And it's been too many examples from so many different listeners, male and female, about this sort of thing happening, as well as even them saving you a seat. You were talking about the white woman and she remembers your name and all of that. It just sounded like delectable Negro, just like social consumption of a black person going on in the classroom, and mistreatment and abuse. That's what it sounded like. The Emmy with the vagrants out front situation, what would you have done differently, since you said you did your recording and these drunk white people, they came up to the, I guess, the door, they forgot their key, and this long, tacky exchange, them cursing at you, ensued. What would you have done differently in 60 seconds?
I would have been more direct, or, like, not even, like, I think I would have just let them do the whole thing, and I would have just sat there and looked at them. And then I would have been like, so are you done? And then said, let me see your photo ID, instead of the whole, let me see your photo ID, and then the whole thing going, you know. I would just be quiet. Like, that's one of the new codes. Like, just because white people are saying something to me, it doesn't mean that I need to respond right away. I'm still working on that. So just, you know, that way it could be all be done. Photo ID, please. You know, that just to avoid the whole thing. It's still recorded.
Diggs saying as little as possible with whites. That is always, in my opinion, efficient counter-racism. As few words as possible, and certainly remembering you do not have to respond frequently. You do not have to say anything to a white person. Keep that in mind as well. I think retired firefighter and Mr. Steele both had additional comments. Retired firefighter, did you have additional comments you wanted to share?
Yes. Three things. I did notice on the female caller who with the tape, just wanted to commend her on how grand it was, because what I noticed on the tape was the white person seemed to be very, very agitated, but yet the tone of her voice was even all the way through the particular incident that was recorded. I can recall her saying that she was telling us that she was nervous, but I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell by it. So it seems to be that you are doing self-practice, and I say keep doing what you're doing. One thing about this particular program of its importance, that it's very scientific. It's very scientific as far as a lot of people who normally don't know one another, but yet are non-white victims of racism, white supremacy, coming together and sharing, exchanging views and information. And it shows that it can help each and every one of us individually. To the female, non-white black female who's a teacher, what I sensed out of her was almost a natural gift of being very witty. And my meaning for wit being witty is to say something that is logical at a very quick period of time. The Sarah Lee situation when she was being stereotyped was priceless. And the best person I can think of that it reminds me of is the great Muhammad Ali. He was very good at being very witty, to be able to say things of constructive value and of logic in a split second. Also, something was mentioned about through a lot of people today about training, the training process on the job. It is always at best tacky, especially when white people are around. On the job that I was on, it can actually get very, very dangerous. One particular incident of an abandoned department store where a previous fire was at, where we conducted a training exercise, the first and foremost mistake that was made, and this was by a non-black person, that you're supposed to make that particular environment safe when you're training on the fire department. Now, expect it when you go on a real call. Of course, there's going to be some unforeseen dangers, that sort of thing. But on the training exercise, you have to inspect the place. It was not done. I didn't have any knowledge that it wasn't done. We were up on a roof about three stories high, something like that. And then a white male who was the supervisor of another crew, showing off to the chief, brought his crew up on the roof, and we thought the drill was over with. Next thing you know, we could hear somebody saying, "Somebody fell through the roof." Three stories up. It ended up being a non-white black male, and as we were breaching the door, he was describing on us his multiple injuries, internal injuries, broken hip, compound fracture of his leg, to where still today, that took place probably about 20 years ago, and he still has some fallback from the injuries. That sort of thing. So, you know, the training process, you know, you really got to be focused. Really got to be focused and be very careful because you have that unusual number of other employees that are together, and then it becomes a lot of times like Comedy Central in some cases, and really got to be paying attention. But that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Mr. Steele?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
First, I would like to thank the host for counting every single instance of food being brought up as a way of conducting racism, or rather conversation about food as a means of conducting racism. I think if you recall, I mentioned that keeping the conversation restricted to food, it cuts down on the terroristic aspect of communicating with racist white supremacists on the job. I think I made mention that it could devolve into tacky conversation. But I think all the examples being brought up, they strike me as tacky. So. But again, thank you for keeping track. Also, the remarks made about the construction industry are true. I have been involved in the construction industry on the software side of things. And I'll say that after having gone to a number of different conferences and working internationally in the construction industry, I'll say that it's the same all over the world. It is the most unrefined elements of society getting together and conducting business with one another. And I think that
I've been in situations where I've been on conferences and trips where I have been eating and drinking and or whining and dining, as they say, with different executives from different companies, and the conversation is always the most unrefined conversation that I've had in a professional setting. Just very tacky conversation. If they catch wind that I'm from Chicago or I've lived in Chicago or anything about Chicago, they're immediately having very tacky conversations about, or rather terroristic conversations about black people. So even on the software side of things, the construction industry is just a haven for brutes. And then finally, I think that it should be mentioned that the caller earlier that mentioned the Sara Lee pies joke, that had me in stitches. I was rolling over here. I have to concur with the previous caller that that caller is very witty and hilarious. You should think about doing stand-up. And I'll mute my line from there. Thank you.
Right on. I will share. We have another caller. She wrote in her commentary. She said, my son, who works for the city, was on leave due to a head injury while working. He received a letter from Workman's Comp stating that he would not be receiving Workman's Comp any longer due to being diagnosed by a doctor he had never met, seen, or talked to about his injury with malingering. My son was seeing a concussion specialist, confirming that due to his injury, he could work. As a result of Workman's Comp decision based only on a doctor he never saw, his employer called and left a voicemail message saying he was fired. Workman's Comp also stated that if he appealed the decision, they would sue him for the money he already received. I have never heard of the word malingering until this. My son is appealing the decision. Wow, that is super aggressive. If you appealed the decision, then we're going to see you to get the inadequate compensation that you've already received to take that back as well. Like, that's extra white, extra racist. And the term malingering, I associate that with that, South Africa. I think in Madiba's autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom, I think he talks about when he was in greater confinement, they would do like slow goes, when they would be out forced to do slave labor, that they would try to work really slow, and that sometimes they would malinger, I think is how he would describe what they were doing. But yeah, that's the term malinger. Looking it up, exaggerate or feign illness in order to escape duty or work, malinger. We have, unless someone has something that they can get in 30 seconds.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, greetings to you guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that the story you just read, again, sounds like consumption, sounds like the Delectable Negro. Just in the approach to them wanting to take back, like you said, those inadequate funds for his suffering. And also the story that MA relayed in regards to, and she is one of my heroines on this program, that she relayed in regards to the male and female white couple that was terrorizing and abusing her at work. That also sounds like the Delectable Negro, too. It reminded me of the story of the black male who was asked to fry fish for the white male on the deck of a ship in the middle of a storm, and then once knowing that he would not be able to accomplish the goal, and then just abuse him and terrorize him in front of all the other slaves. It sounded very similar to that as far as the story that she described. So again, this theme of consumption is going to be very powerful on the job, especially because the job has now replaced the plantation. Thank you, and I'll mute my line.
Right on. Is the caller in Renton still here?
Yes, I am.
Oh, right on. I have a silly question to ask. You can feel free to not answer, but I was wondering, just with the Washington State area, do you have a white parent?
No, I do not.
Right on. There's lots of that here. I was curious.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Right on. We will be here tomorrow for Delectable Negroes, Session 4. Very excited. Thanks again to Dr. Curry. He'll be part of the introduction for the session tomorrow. He was the one to recommend the book in the first place, just published in 2014. Really great read thus far. We're still very early in the book. We're right, like, a couple pages left in Chapter 2, where we're picking up tomorrow. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Should be great. Saturday, the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Tune in. We can share our views. The female caller, I hope we were not rude. I hope I was not rude. Certainly ring in this coming Saturday, and you can share about your experience where you were mistreated. It's your shopping experience. Or anybody else have thoughts they want to share this Saturday, the Global Sunday Talk on Racism. That'll be Sunday, early time, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 12 noon Pacific this Saturday. We'll be looking forward to speaking with listeners from all over the globe. Racism, global problem. That's it. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll do it same time next Thursday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Thursdays, Workplace Racism. I will suggest, as always, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I've seen no evidence that us being intoxicated, alcohol, tobacco, whatever it is, that that's going to help us solve our problem. I think there's a lot of evidence that Daniel Holtzclaw, Darren Wilson, any of these other race soldiers, badge or no, that us being under the influence just makes it easier for them to terrorize, stomp on us, plunder, and consume black people. So I think Dr. Welsing, Mr. Fuller, Dr. Cambon, a lot Rosa Parks, a lot of the folks that we esteem, I think they would co-sign. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.